This week on the Donut Box Podcast, we talk about growing up in the 90s / early 2000s and what that was like. Whole plethora of stories. And we talk about how millennials are now dealing with ChatGPT. Does it make us lazy by using it? Let's find out.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the birth of the internet, cell phones, social media, and other memories of past times. We're really going to take it back in this episode. So let's stroll down memory lane and get into this intro. Hi, I'm Micah.
And I'm Chris.
And we've been friends for over 20 years.
Surprisingly, we haven't killed each other yet. Years ago, we started our own variety show, and it sucked.
Now that we're adults, we decided to give it another try. Like in the movie, life is like a box of donuts. You never know which one's gonna be the next one.
Wait a second, it's chocolates.
Oh, right. Okay, well, let's start the show.
This is the Donut Box Podcast.
Well, Micah, it's another week, another wonderful Monday of us doing the Donut Box Podcast. Man, I'm telling you, last week when you asked the questions about like Facebook and like all those questions, it really got me stirring and just thinking about a whole bunch of different things. And so that's why I'm so excited. This episode, we kind of can expound a little bit more. So it's going to be a great episode.
Yeah, man. No time limits. We're literally just going to talk about childhood, what we remember, what we liked about the times, what was not so great, what we want to bring back about. You know, I hate to be the guy that's like, it was great back in the day. There were some really great things, and then there were some like, not so much. And then there's some things we're going to talk about nowadays that we really love and we really take advantage of. And then when there's some things about nowadays, it's like, man, as a millennial, that's a bunch of garbage. So I'm ready to really get into it. Do you have a burning question to start off with, man?
Yeah, I'll ask you a question. Now, I know that you kind of went through different phases of like the fads and all that, but was there ever like a fad or a trend that you really wish you would have been a part of that you didn't get to be a part of?
Man, so yeah, and I don't know if you call this necessarily a fad or a trend. Fashion-wise, that was kind of a lot of what I wanted to get into. I was a really big sports fan, and so I really loved a lot of jerseys and things like that. Like, I remember there was a bunch of kids in school who had a jersey for everything. I mean, and I'm really going to date ourselves, but hey, that's what this episode is for. But I remember this one kid, he had like the Eagles Donovan McNabb jersey. He had the Michael Vick jersey. He had the Ben Roethlisberger jersey. I mean, pretty much like every quarterback from every team, he had a jersey for. Basketball wise, like he had a Kobe jersey, like, you know, and it was just every day was a different jersey. And I really wanted to be that guy, like, and display, you know, who I really, really liked. Now, what's funny is a lot of the people that I liked were not exactly the mainstream people. And people are probably like, why do you have his jersey? Like, nobody knows about that guy. But for instance, I had that Mikey Allstott jersey, old Mike Allstott with the Buccaneers. And, you know, again, there's probably a limited crowd that's like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. But a lot of people are like, who is that? But yeah, that was the jersey that I really, really wanted. But yeah, it was a lot of the jerseys and things like that. Now, there were a few trends and fads that I went through that I didn't necessarily have. Going back to the old jerseys, it was mainly because they were expensive and my folks weren't going to spend the money on all that. They're like, yeah, because even back then they were like 80, 90 bucks a pop. And for back then, that was really expensive. I mean, even for now, that's pretty expensive. They were like, yeah, no. But I did go through some other fads fashion wise that I wanted to get more into the scene of it, but I didn't necessarily do it. And that was the skateboarder phase. I know you remember that one, man. One, I couldn't really grow my hair out because of the religious background that we were a part of. Like, you couldn't have long bangs, but I wanted to be that kid that could flip his hair and, you know, go skateboarding and stuff like that. Not exactly like emo, but kind of like the more goth, you know, that sort of thing. I remember going and shopping at PacSun and like the Element independent stuff and all that. It was somewhat of a fad. And I did have a skateboard, but I wasn't allowed to run with any of the circles that would have taught me how to use it. So the best thing that I did with it was, you know, sit on it and ride down hills. The only thing I got to do with the skateboard. But how about you, man? Is there any fads or trends you want to get into?
Yeah, kind of going back to the hair. I wish even if I wanted to, I wouldn't have been able to grow my hair out that long. But that was like the ultimate riz. Like, if you could like flip your hair.
Yeah.
Like, the girls loved it, especially if you were like had the flippy hair and you wore like the puka shells.
The puka shells. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one. I really wish I would have been able to get more into like the wrestling scene. Like I didn't grow up with it in my household, but like there are a lot of my friends who like had the wrestling shirts when The Rock was big, like the action figures, that was big. And so like, I wish I would have been a part of that. But also too, like just being part of the groups that like had trading cards, like I couldn't do Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh, but I did have baseball cards.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like a big thing. But like, I don't know.
And didn't you get rid of your baseball cards at one point? Like you sold them to a kid, right?
Yeah, I sold them to a kid. He was a new kid that was just like, this was when I became an adult. He was like just getting into collecting. And so like, I was like, here, like just take care of these, all that. But I had a brief stint of when I did like the hip hop phase or like dressing like that. I wish that phase would have lasted just a little bit longer. But
for sure. You know, it's funny that trend has totally changed. Like wearing hip hop style clothing it's like skinny jeans. And like, I've even seen people like tuck in their shirts and stuff like that. Back in the day, it was like everything was baggier and all get out. And jorts were a thing. Jeans, shorts. That was the big thing. And you had to have them like 3/4 length. They were like almost jeans, except, you know, they went past your knees and everything. But and then the shirts were like 3 sizes too big. And that was like the big thing. I loved it because it was comfortable. I was like, oh, yeah, it was comfortable. And I remember my folks liked that phase, too, because then I could grow into them because I was growing all the freaking time. So, yeah, those are definitely some trends. I don't miss some of that because I look back at some of in the skateboarder phase, I got blonde hair that turned into frosty blonde tips. And here recently, I saw a picture of myself from back then. And I was like, ooh, that didn't age very well. That doesn't look very good.
I think I've told this story, but I remember the first Sunday that I saw that happen. And what it was, I remember where you guys used to sit, like in church. And I remember the pastor used a teaching of like, hey, Jesus was 12 years old, da 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 da, when he was in the temple. And he was like, I want to call up all the 12-year-olds. And like, I was like 12. And then there was like 2 other kids. And you came up there and I was like, wait a second, you're younger than me. You're not 12. And then you came up there and I was like, my gosh, what happened to his hair? And your mom at the time got the blonde tips too. And so y'all were like matching. And I was like, what the heck is going on?
And not just that, I know we're rabbit trailing on this point, but not just that. I'd never dyed my hair at any point. And I don't think I have ever since then either. But if you've ever dyed your hair before, you know, you have to put the stuff in your hair and let it sit and all this other stuff. Well, to dye, it was literally bleach blonde. Like, it was bleach blonde. And so you can only hold it on there for a certain amount of time. I think it was like an hour or something like that. Well, my mother forgot that, hey, this was in your hair. I don't know what happened. But all I know is, like, I ran downstairs because my scalp was on fire at one point. And so it was probably blonder than it should have because it sat in there for quite a while. It was really blonde. And then, of course, as my hair grew out, then it became blonde tips because, you know, the brown came through. But yeah, not so great times on that front. That was not a trend that I miss at all. And a lot of people assume that it was like, oh, you're trying to emulate Eminem. And I was like, I don't know who that is. I didn't know who that was. We just moved from Germany and like doing the blonde thing, especially early 2000s. That was like a big thing. That or blue hair. Like blue hair was like a really, maybe it's because the song I'm Blue, da-ba-dee-da. But yeah, anyways, so not a trend that I reminisce on in a nice way. All right, man. So my question to you was, how do you think growing up during the birth of the internet shaped our generation compared to the older generations and the younger generations? Now, go into the birth of the internet, because a lot of people assume in the other generations, like, hey, you guys have always had the internet. And yes, as that is true, it wasn't in the capacity everybody thinks it is. So just elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah. So even though there was still the birth of the internet, like it was still really new. Even we've talked about this, families had a family computer. And so there would be one computer that was like in usually the living room. And most of the time it was used for school to like look stuff up. But I still remember going to the library and like checking out books and like using those for my research paper. And so like the internet really didn't start taking off mainstream until I'd say end of the 2008, 2009, 2010. It was still a thing in 2005, but we really just used it to play games. I used it to play games. I used it just for that, or to look up something, but we didn't really. I remember my parents would print off the directions from MapQuest and print them off.
Yeah.
It wasn't a heavily used thing. And so we still had entertainment and TV and stuff, and we still have to figure out what we, but it was all experimental. So even making videos online, that was still experimental. I remember you would do class projects, and that was the whole thing within learning technology. It was learning how to use editing software, learning how to use digital cameras, all that stuff. But it was still kind of new. So it wasn't the internet ruled our life. We still went outside. We still played, I don't know. But people have that misconception of, yeah, you guys are on the internet all the time. No, that's Gen Z. That's Gen Z. That's not us.
Yeah, for sure. And how do you think, so speaking of the generations, how do you think that it's affected older generations, and how do you think it's affected the younger generations? I mean, we'll go into even more of that, I'm sure, with a lot more of these other questions, but how do you think it's really affected the other generations?
So I attribute it to, and the best comparison I can make is in the TV show The Office, when they're realizing, hey, the paper industry, it's moving away from you need a salesman to help sell you stuff, to now you can go to a website and you can order stuff. So I think there was a lot of hesitation with the older generation. It's kind of like AI now. People are oh, it's going to take over the world and it's going to blow you up. And I remember Y2K was a big thing because everything was on the computer system. And they were yeah, it's going to erase all the records and the computers are going to take over. So I think the older generation was really afraid of it, and they didn't want to use it to embrace change. And now the younger generations, they overuse it almost to substitute for their cognitive critical thinking skills. So I think our generation is the bridge. We bridged the gap of hey, we kind of figured the internet out. We figured out how to pioneer it, how to harness it. And now Gen Z and Gen Alpha is reaping the benefits of what we have taken and done with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's amazing to think about, now there's all these underwater cables and things like that to connect everything worldwide. And, there's all this infrastructure and there's bits and bytes that are moving at the speed of light through underwater cables, all to bring us stupid videos about cats or whatever, and it's very different than it was before. Like Chris said, I remember having that that computer in the main area of the house. And it wasn't like you could just hop on and get on. A lot of people, where we started off was dial-up internet. And dial-up internet, listen, if you're getting on, everybody in the whole house knows you're getting on because it, made all the noise, and you had to dial in and do all this stuff. And then that's when DSL came in. And I remember that was a big thing because it was high speed. And what a lot of people don't understand too, it wasn't exactly the best thing to use because depending on what internet you had, it was very slow. It was very slow. It was one of those things to where now we're so used to web pages just popping up and doing what we need them to do. And even if there's a little bit of latency, people are like, oh, what's going on with the dang internet? But before, it would take sometimes minutes for a web page to load. Sometimes it would take and it would come in and it would go a little bit of it, a little bit of it. And then finally it would do the full thing. And, if you're going to a link or something else, it's like you have to wait for the page to fully load, then go to the link, and then you got to wait for that page to load. So it wasn't exactly the most convenient thing. So I think, a lot of people with that misconception of saying, okay, you guys have used the internet for a long time. Again, yeah, we've had it, but it wasn't exactly refined and polished and something that we wanted to use or was a game changer until, like Chris said, until later on. So, that's my answer to that one.
What do you think? Maybe this is kind of like a offshoot question, but what is a favorite defining thing of kids who grew up from then that either defines us as a generation or that you just miss, about your childhood that other generations just won't get because they didn't grow up with it?
So I do miss the kind of going back to the, and I hope I'm answering your question with this, but I miss the ingenuity that we did have of how we had to learn to entertain ourselves. And I know a lot of the previous generations are like, yeah, we didn't have nothing to do either. But what I find rather annoying about nowadays, and it's good because it's convenient, is, you know, you have your cell phone for almost everything. It's a one-stop shop for almost everything, right? And not just that, we have video game consoles out the behind, and there's nothing wrong with these things, and I enjoy every bit of it, but I do miss not having those things and having to think outside the box. And something that I definitely remember from our generation, and I do see this with kids now too, that their parents go get outside and do something, was, you know, when you got home from school. Now in my case, I was a latchkey kid, so I wasn't allowed to go outside until my parents got home. But it was one of those things of past 5 o'clock, like your behind is outside until the sun goes down, and don't even think about coming inside because you need to go and play with friends. And that's something that you see, but kind of don't see, because even from what I've seen from kids, it's, hey, come over to my house and we're going to play some video games. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I remember doing that as a kid, but we didn't have a ton of that. Like, it was somewhat sparse. It was like, okay, you want to come over and play Madden? Okay, we can only do that for a certain amount of time, and then we need to go back outside or do something. And, you know, I remember, like, when we were kids, man, you remember we, like, took sticks off the tree and be like, this is my sword, and we're going to freaking sword fight and do all sorts of crazy stuff. Or, you know, we came up with all these weird ideas or whatever. I remember, like, this sounds kind of bad, but there was all these, like, younger kids in the neighborhood, and I remember being like, okay, and we're not supposed to talk about Fight Club, but I'm going to talk about Fight Club. Mm. I remember we were all like, oh, yeah. So, like, we're going to do, like, this like, fighting tournament. And it's like, because we're the older kids, like, we'll just beat all y'all up. So we're not going to have that. And, you know, they're little kids. They're not really going to hurt each other. So literally, we just were like, okay, yeah, y'all, you know, fight each other. And we, like, picked two kids that were, like, the same size. And little kids love to fight each other. They're like, give me the permission, please. I will fight this kid. And so we would just do stuff like that. But it was just some of those, maybe that's a bad example, but, you know, it's like you have these ideas and you come up with this stuff, and it's out of necessity, it's out of boredom. But at the same time, there's a lot of things now to where I feel like it's predefined. Here's what you're going to do. Here's what you should do because you're this age and whatnot. And it's a lot of predefined things. And I don't feel like there's a lot of that thought process that goes through nowadays, because it's so easy to be like, yeah, I'm hanging out with my friends and they're all sitting there on their phones, yeah. You know? And it's like, I just saw this TikTok thing. It's like, well, that's great. But at the same time, there's no real thought going into, okay, what are we going to do next? What do we want to do to have fun? And I think it leaves out certain things, because there was even like social norms that we had that people don't think about is when we were kids, right? For instance, it's like, if we're all going to Billy Bob's house, right? I don't know who Billy Bob is. It's just an example, but we're all going to Billy Bob's house, but so-and-so's mom won't let him go over to Billy Bob's house. Like, we're not going to Billy Bob's house because that's not fair to him. He needs to hang out too. So it's like, we had these social norms within there, and I feel like a lot of that is lost too.
There's, yeah, I was even going to say, like, when it came to, like, hey, all the parents are going to hang out, they didn't be like, okay, here's some toys for y'all to play with. Here's a movie that y'all, it's like, nope, y'all
figure it out.
Y'all go figure it out. And that's where we came up with a lot of games or whatever. We would just figure out stuff to do. One thing I do miss, I feel like the millennial generation, they made nerd culture cool. Like, we were kind of the ones like, nerd culture cool, because even think about, like, all the movies that were coming out. Was Star Wars was coming out again, like, made that cool. Lord of the Rings, right? Like, superhero movies, like, all that's Harry Potter, like, all that stuff. Whereas before, you would get made fun of for being a nerd. And as a kid, like, there weren't, as a kid, you would get made fun of for, like, but as you got older, people were like, nah, man, like, you like that stuff? That's cool. Like, I like that stuff too. So, like, nerd culture and pop culture and, like, all that stuff, like, Disney, you know how they're like Disney adults? Like, like, we're the ones who made that cool. Like,
and it's more acceptable, like, Comic Cons. They wouldn't be nearly as big, I don't think, if it wasn't for our generation. Because, yes, you had those, you had previous generations that were into those things, but it definitely wasn't acceptable to dress up any type of way, and it definitely wasn't acceptable to go to, it was a very underground thing. Like, it was a, like, underground, okay, But now, I mean, think about it. You can, right now, I'm not into it, but it's like, hey, Chris, let's go play Dungeons and Dragons. And nobody's like, nerd. You're just a nerd for doing that sort of, it's like, nobody thinks like that. It's like, okay, yeah, you're playing a board game. That's great. So I feel like there's a lot of those social norms that, yeah, you're right, have opened up because of millennials. So yeah,
there's,
I definitely think
like
so.
I don't know. There's just like, I know every generation has it, like 70s, 80s, has like a feel as like a kid. Like there's just a feel where you watch a show, you're like, yeah. Like when I watched like George Lopez is a big one. I don't know why, but like George Lopez, Everybody Loves Raymond. Some of those shows that you can definitely tell like this took place in the 2000s. It immediately like transports me back and it's like, oh yeah, like I missed that time.
And for me too, even like home movies that were shot on VHS cameras, like those always, and of course it's because the footage looks, it is quintessential 90s, but it's almost weird because when I think back to 90s and early 2000s, it's like my vision is almost like a VHS camera. Like it almost like looked different. I don't know how to say that. It's kind of interesting because it's like, you just attribute those times to just different feel, different look. I mean, we even talked about this too, like the cups, like they had like the aesthetics of like the 90s had an aesthetic to it. Like there was these colors and even the thumbnail that we're putting out for this episode with these squiggly lines, you know, that you look at that and you're just like, oh yeah, 90s. And it just brings up so many other things. I don't know. Those squiggly lines also bring up like workout gear from that time and like, I don't know. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Also, too, like thinking about big name brands that are big now, but like getting their first start in the 90s. So like YouTube, obviously. But then I was even thinking about Starbucks. Like Starbucks used to just be kind of like this. I don't know. There was like a stigma.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember looking at people. It's like, Starbucks, you spending money on Starbucks, like you're different. Or even like I'm drinking a Red Bull, like, and Red Bull was a big thing that just came out in like the 2000s. So it was like,
and I remember it almost being like edgy in a weird way,
yeah,
because it was like Red Bull gives you wings. And I remember like everybody was kind of like, oh yeah, Red Bull. And but you think about how many brands spun off of that. You think about how many brands spun off of Starbucks. So just up the corner from my house over here, there's a Starbucks, there's a Dutch Bros, there's a PJ's Coffee, there's a what, and it's all basically the same concepts, right? And they all basically spun off of Starbucks and their idea in the first place. And they found out like, hey, we can charge $5 for a cup of coffee and only spend like 50 cents, you know, and make stupid profit off of it. And it became a whole thing. So yeah, there's a lot that spun off.
I know you asked this question last time, and sorry, I know we're kind of going off on a rabbit trail, but question on top of a question, what are like some snacks, food, or things that like you immediately think of when you think of the 2000s that maybe like you can't get anymore, or like, yeah, they used to be really big and now they're just like mainstream now?
So one that I never drank these or whatever, but something I remember being really big in the 90s was Tab. Do you remember Tab?
Yeah, Tab was
nasty. It was nasty, and I can tell why it went away, but I remember that being a huge marketing push. I think it was a Coke product, I think is why it was. Like, it was a Coca-Cola product, but I remember that pink can and like Tab being a thing. And this is kind of a further thing that you can't really get, but Tag body spray.
Dude, like, that's what I was going to say.
Body sprays.
Tag body spray. And then Axe was like a big thing. It was like, man, oh, if you have Axe, like the ladies are going to love you. Like you are cream.
Bro, you have to say is Tab and Axe, or Tag and Axe. And I'm sitting here thinking about my, like, I could just smell my gym locker room in like middle school, because it's just like every time after gym, nobody wanted to use the stick deodorant. Like nobody wanted to use the stick deodorant. So it was just like, spray that stuff on and you're good to go. And I think a lot of it, they did have good marketing. Like they did have good marketing. I mean, even Axe now, they still have the same marketing scheme of like, oh yeah, you get all the women if you get Axe. And so that was the whole thing, was just like, oh yeah. And I remember there was people in the locker room and they'd be like, oh, what kind of Axe is that? It's like, it's the Blue Mountain Lightning. Like, oh yeah, we're going to have that. You know, it's like, oh, I got to try some of that. And you'd be like switching like scents and all this other stuff. And really and truly, we just smelled like crap because you just got done with gym and you're just masking it with like Axe.
Do you remember, do you remember Vault? Do you remember the drink Vault?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of like a Mellow Yellow, but like Vault, that's like, 2005.
That was another Coke product. And I remember that being like, so the, yeah, there was Red Bull, but I think that was their attempt at kind of like an energy drink. It was like more when energy drinks were coming out. I remember people being like, oh yeah, that's an energy drink. But now I wouldn't even consider it an energy drink. It's like, nah, not really. It was just another, because it didn't have like a stupid ton of caffeine in it or anything like that. But I think it was kind of that transition into doing some of that stuff. Speaking of energy drinks, one, and this is off topic a little bit, one that I've never understood that came from back then that I'm still very confused with how they're in business is Rockstar. Like, how is Rockstar still in business? Because they've been from like way back then. I remember Rockstar energy drinks, but I've never drank one. I've never known anybody to drink one. Hey, if you drink Rockstar and you have an explanation, drop it in the comments. I'm still not sure. Maybe it's a front. Who knows? But
Monster was a big one that came out of that. Like Monster yeah. And then a NOS, obviously.
Oh, yeah. We've got NOS stories.
Do you remember, and you got them in the grocery store, and they don't sell them anymore now. But do you remember they're called the Wonder Ball? It's like the big chocolate. It's a big chocolate ball. And then in the middle is like almost like tart candy, like individual.
Yeah.
You get like a Disney sticker or something. I remember being like, these are so cool.
And maybe speaking of that, I don't think this is a thing too much anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. But I remember there being in the grocery stores right up front, they used to have like the little turnstile candy machines, but then they also had like the stick-on tattoos and stuff like that. I remember that was like a big thing for a while, or like the stickers from that. Do they have that a lot in grocery stores anymore?
No, not as much anymore. Those are more like in laundromats, and so they don't really have those anymore. Do you remember Ring Pops and Baby Bottle Pop?
Yeah.
I'd never had those, and I was like, why do people like those?
They were very sweet and tart. Like, the Ring Pop was better than the Baby Bottle Pop, because the Baby Bottle Pop was like, it was like the sour stuff. I feel like Sour Patch Kids like replaced that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Like, I feel like that replaced that sort of stuff. We talked about some of this stuff, and I just don't think it's as big anymore, but I remember Go-Gurts being a huge thing.
Yeah.
Fruit roll-ups, those are massive. I even remember, I think this was, oh bro, maybe you remember this. Do you remember when, I think it was Heinz ketchup, when they came out with all the different color ketchups, where you had like the purple ketchups and like all that stuff? I remember like trying it, but it, you know, it didn't taste any different. It was just ketchup and it was just dyed. But I remember when they came out, it was like lime green, it was like purple, it was like they came out with all these different colors. Yeah.
What about Trix? Trix yogurt.
Trix yogurt.
Yogurt goes hard. It goes.
Yeah.
Do they still have it? I can't remember. I know they still have Go-Gurts and Danimals, but I wonder if they still have Trixie. Trix yogurt.
Yeah, it was good. But I mean, then again, it was because it had nice sugary cereal in it. Yeah. So that's what made it good. But yeah, there was so much from back then that it was like, I feel like they're still around, but they're not necessarily as big. I remember the Nesquiks, like the milks were like really big. And I think it was probably a lot because of marketing. Like, I remember that little Nesquik rabbit a ton, and you don't see that at all no more. Nope. Like, I see him in the store, but like, you don't see, I don't see him at all. Yeah. And then the other thing was, do they still have Flintstones gummies? Like, I remember taking like the little vitamin, like Flintstone gummies. You remember that?
Yeah, but it's more like now it's like the actual, like gummies. They have different varieties and all sorts
of stuff.
Yeah. Do you remember, and this is how they got me, because they got a good marketing, but do you remember Bunny Bread?
What? Yeah.
I saw that commercial for some bunny bread. I said, look, it's got a bunny on it. Let's get some. Like, I told my mom, like, let's get some bunny bread.
Now, did you have like a cereal that you were like, yeah, like I really liked as a kid? Like, mine was Lucky Charms. My folks would not get it because it was sugary and marshmallows, but I was just like, man, Lucky Charms. Like, I love some Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Fruit Loops, Fruity Pebbles. Bro, do you remember those sugar, they call them honey smacks now, but those sugar smacks, bro, those are cavities, like in a bowl.
Yeah.
And then the Cookie Crisp Frosted Flakes, like, bro.
I think they took them away, and this was a product that was back then, was the Reese's cereal. Do you remember that?
Reese's Puffs, peanut butter chocolate flavor. No, they still have those. They still have those? Yeah.
Okay, because like I thought I heard like a few years ago that they had to take them off the market because they were like stupid unhealthy, but I don't know.
No, I've still seen some, I think.
They're still around? Okay.
Yeah,
but yeah, so. Reese's Puffs. Again, my folks wouldn't buy nothing like that because they were like, nah, that's so unhealthy. It's not even funny. But yeah, those are the things that I remember being pumped really, really hard back then. That was the stuff that was like, oh, yeah, let's get some of that stuff. Yeah, again, what's hard about this episode is I'll probably be 30 minutes after we're done. I'll be like, oh, yeah, and about that, too. I'll be texting you like, yeah, I should have said that, too. So, all right, man. Is it your question or my question?
It's your question. It's my question. Two questions, so.
Okay, so we kind of touched on this when we talked about the whole internet thing. But what was your first experience with social media? And that could either be signing up for social media, who you saw using social media. Like, what was your first experiences when you started hearing about it? And what was that like? How has it changed over the years as well?
So the first one I ever heard about was MySpace. And I heard about it on the news because I remember watching the news with my parents. And it was like, oh, yeah, if your kids have MySpace, like, they're going to get abducted. Like, it's not safe. There's predators on there. So I was like, okay, MySpace, no go. And again, our family didn't use the computer that much. So I wasn't allowed with social media. But then I remember being in fifth grade, and I remember one of my friends, she'd be like, yeah, I'm going to message so-and-so on MySpace. And I was like, there's predators on there. Don't be on there.
Yeah.
I remember you having a MySpace because you showed it to me and it was really, and I was like, this is so cool. Like, you can have your friends on here. You can, you know, put backgrounds on there. You can put music on there. And I was like, man, I want a MySpace. So the first ever social media, it wasn't social media, but instant messenger was Gmail. I got a Gmail account when I was in sixth grade, because all my friends were like, yeah, Gmail, like, gotta get Gmail. And it had an instant messaging feature on it. So like, you could send emails, but then you could like chat with people like live and see when they were live. So I used that. And then we've talked about this, but the church we went to, they were like, during like one of the spiritual weekends, they were like, yeah, MySpace is bad. Like, you need to move to Facebook because it's a Christian alternative. Like, if you want to honor God, you go to Facebook because there's not as many sickos or creeps on there. And so in seventh grade, I got a Facebook, and that's when like I started messaging like people, because you could do direct message and then you could also do instant messages. So it was like, okay, like, I'm going to use this to holler at some of the honeys on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody was getting a Facebook like in seventh grade. Like, that was probably around, well, not to date myself, I'm not going to say the year, but kind of figure it out. But yeah, dude, like, everyone was starting to get a Facebook. I remember you got a Facebook, and it was like, yeah. So I'll pause right here because I'll go in a little bit more, but kind of talk to them about your MySpace deal.
What I thought was funny, going back to the whole Facebook thing, what I thought was funny was it was sold to us, like Chris said, as the Christian alternative, but it was pumped to us so hard that it was a Christian thing. Like, we didn't know about no Mark Zuckerberg and all this other stuff. What we thought it was I thought it was a group of Christians got together and was like, we don't like MySpace. We don't like, what was the other one? There was one that like predated MySpace that was not very good either. And I thought that a whole group of Christians got together and like, okay, we're going to make this Facebook thing. Nah, I wasn't that at all. I don't know why they pumped it as this Christian thing, but it really wasn't. Anyways, so my first experience was in the fourth grade, the second time. Great, great times. So fourth grade, the second time, there was this really bad girl. And you know the type that just like everything she does is like, oh, I'm the baddest at this. I'm the baddest at that. And I'm doing this wrong. And I'm doing this wrong. She used to brag and brag. And so she was talking about being on MySpace. And again, my folks and what I had heard was probably the same news stories that Christopher had heard. And really, it was about, we had been told that it was full of pornography. Like, that was where a bunch of porn stars were and all this other stuff. So don't get a MySpace because there's a whole bunch of pornography and predators. So like, you had a mixture of both. And so I was like, well, how do you have one? Because there was an age limit. Like, you couldn't get one until you were like 16, 17, something like that, or even 18, maybe. I don't know. And she said, oh, well, I just lied about my age. Like, you could just lie about your age. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I remember going to MySpace, getting on there and signing up. And sign up back then was not nearly as elaborate as, like, they didn't ask for your gender. They didn't ask for all this other stuff. It was literally like your name, your birthday, and what's your email address, and what's the password you want it to be. And that was it. Like, it was out the door. So I lied. I said that I was years older than I was. I started this MySpace up, right? And going back to the whole, you have a family computer and everybody knows what's going on. And back then, it was one of those things. Yeah, you could delete your history and whatnot. I didn't know how to do any of that. And so if you go back to your history, it's not like now where security is a priority and it auto logs you out and things like that. You could go back, just click on the web page they were on, and it would log you right in. And this was before the days of like, keep me logged in. It's like, no, I just kept you logged in. And so my paternal unit went and saw my internet history, goes to MySpace, it logs right in. And I remember being upstairs. He's like, Mike, come here, come here, come here. I got to talk to you. I was like, oh, great. And so I go downstairs and I go and talk with him. And he's just like, what's this MySpace? What's going on? And why he was so upset is because the first friend that you get on MySpace is Tom, the founder of MySpace. But then again, I knew nothing about MySpace. He knew nothing about MySpace, really. So all he sees is this grown man friends me, and I'm sitting here like, hey, I already got a friend, you know? And so he was like, oh, no, there's no way. Because, of course, if you're over here with the idea of, oh, yeah, predators, and now you already got a grown man following your kid, it's like, oh, heck no. So he's like, I'm deleting this, like, never try to get back on here and whatnot. So I was like, okay, whatever. So a few years later, I get into middle school. And again, like Chris was saying, everybody was getting Facebooks, everybody was getting MySpace, everybody was doing this sort of thing. And I remember going and signing into MySpace, and I tried to create an account with that same email. And it was like, oh, you already have an account. So I was like, I guess he never deleted it. And it still had the same password and everything. So I just went right in. And Chris, you're going to think this is funny. And it doesn't matter now at this point. You know what my password was to MySpace back then?
What?
It was, I love it. I-L-U-V it. And that was a Young Jeezy lyric. So there you go there. But yeah, so I signed into MySpace. And it was like, yeah, everything was there. And then I started adding friends from there. And again, you can do the little backgrounds and all sorts of stuff. And really what MySpace was really big for at the time was music. That's where like all the artists were. And so I remember like friending a bunch of artists and they would auto friend you back. And I just remember being like, oh yeah, T.I., Young Jeezy, my friend on MySpace. And I was so happy about all that. But really what made me move over to Facebook, I'm sorry, my earbud keeps trying to pop out of my ear. But what really made me move over to MySpace or Facebook from MySpace was Chris was talking about the whole direct messaging thing. And MySpace didn't come out with an instant messenger for a while. And for those of you who are like, okay, what exactly are you talking about? I'll explain it briefly. Just like email where you have to refresh the page and everything like that. That's basically the messaging we had. You'd send a message. It was fairly instant, sure, but you had to refresh. Versus, you know, Facebook had the little pop-up at the bottom down there. You could even see if they're typing or whatever, and it's just instant. Bam, bam, bam. And so a lot of the times what would happen, because what was I doing on MySpace? I was chatting with the honeys. I was talking to the ladies. And so a lot of times what would happen is you would get a little frustrated about, you know, having to move over. And there was more parental controls on MySpace because of everything that had happened, because they lowered the age limit. I think the age limit became like 15 or 16 after a while. But you could have your parents like attach their email on there. And so they could like read everything. And so if you got to a certain point in the conversation, maybe you're being a little romantic, it's like, let's hop over to Facebook because can't really see what's going on. That, or sometimes you just get annoyed with having to refresh. And so that's when I hopped over to Facebook. I mean, that whole thing. I'll let you pick it back up, man.
Yeah, so Facebook, and again, like the kids were starting to move from MySpace to Facebook. And so you could post on people's wall, all that. And Facebook, again, it's not like how we have Facebook now. You still have to go on the computer and like log on and all that stuff. So like if you were not by your computer, like you couldn't talk to anybody. So this, I think this was just, and I'm going to tell this story. So I know this is a rabbit hole, and you know which story I'm going to tell. But around my school, there was also a thing called WeWorld. And so WeWorld, like this popular, it was also like this social site. And it was kind of like you'd make your avatar and you make it look like you. And then like you had this house and this world and all this stuff and you could interact. So kind of similar to like Club Penguin or RuneScape or whatever. But there was also a direct messaging feature. So I remember there was, I had a whole bunch of these friends and I was interacting with them on WeWorld. So it actually said, hey, this is, and it said my last name, this is so-and-so's girl. And it was like, man, and it was like this avatar and she was like She was wearing like lingerie, and she had angel wings, and she had like six pack. And like, it was like in the thought bubble, which what it said is like, I'm thinking about my preacher, man. I was like, who is this? And I was like, we were trying to figure it out. And they're like, the whole school was trying to figure it out. Like all the middle school is like, who is this person? And they were like, is it this person? And it was like, nope, I'm not this person. And it was like leaving little hints. And I finally found out who it was. And because I didn't realize it, but it was one of the friends that I was friends with. She had made a spam account, and like she actually did like me, but that was like her hidden. I was like, that's crazy, bro. And what was weird was my avatar, he kind of looked like Jim Jones, because he had like a preacher's outfit on, and he had like the sideburns, and he had like the mustache and goatee, and then he had like sunglasses. And so I was just like, okay. But anyway,
like cult leader over here.
Going back to the Facebook, so yeah, that's where you would go to like chat most of the time to holler at people. Like you'd be like, hey girl, what's up? And we would message each other about the stupidest stuff. We'd be like, hey, they'd be like, hey, you could always tell if they were interested in you because if they put a couple Y's at the end of the hey, it was like, okay. Or if they put
exclamation points,
or they put a smiley face, that's when you had to do like the colon, like parenthesis. There was no
emojis.
Yeah. Or they'd be like, hey, you. And it'd be like, okay. So if you knew if they said hi, it was like, oh yeah, they don't want to talk to you. It'd be like,
they a little cold right now.
It's like, what are you doing? Nothing. You. And that's when like abbreviations like BRB, later, like G to G, gotta go. It's like, yeah. So we'd be like, what are you doing? Nothing. What are you doing? I'm eating. That's cool. What are you eating? Macaroni and cheese. That's cool. I'm watching TV. Yo, cool. And then it goes silent and be like, hey, what's up? What are you doing?
Yeah.
On vacation.
Or it'd be like, my brother's annoying me right now. Well, yeah, what is he doing? It's like, he went over here and punched me in the arm. It's like, well, you should punch him in the arm. It's like, I did. And it's just like back and forth. And something we've talked about too, and I'm going to go on a little rabbit trail. I think what was really cool about that at the time was if you had a cell phone, if you had one, because they were definitely luxuries at the time. So many people forget about minutes and having to have minutes on your phone and everything. So every text cost you a certain number of minutes, and God help you if you went over, because it was going to cost a ton extra. And so I think the instant messaging feature on Facebook was really appealing, because it's like, okay, it's free and I can essentially text with people without having to worry about going over my minutes and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I remember hollering at the ladies. You could do a thing on Facebook back then, poking people. So it would be like you get into this poke contest with the gals and stuff like that. And then a guy would poke you and you'd be like, dude, what's your problem? I'm trying to holler at the honeys, man. You'd write on people's walls. I think probably, I don't know why this memory is coming up, but there was a girl at Chris's school that I liked at one point. And she had a mom who was a nurse at one of the schools, if you remember what I'm talking about.
Think so.
And I remember she was cold to me. She was real cold to me. And so I ended up posting on her wall the song Heartless by Kanye West when it like first came out.
Oh yeah, you can post on other people's walls and you didn't post on other people's walls. Like you'd be like, oh yeah, you are fake. You are a fake person. And the whole world could see it.
And there was no such thing as like you a cyber bully and nothing like that. They didn't want to say nothing like that. So it was one of those. And I'm not saying we went around bullying people, but it's like if a girl was cold to me, it's like, oh yeah, I'd call them out on their wall. Why not? It's like you'd do stuff like that.
Do you remember when people would like have pictures and it'd be like all these celebrity and like tagging your friends in pictures was a big deal. Like that was
a
huge deal. So I remember at school there'd be like these pictures of these celebrities and like tag like da da da. You'd be tagged in a photo and it's like, okay, like. It's like you and 12 others are tagged in this photo. So you would go and look and see what photo am I tagged in? And it would be these celebrities. So you would hover over the celebrity and then it would show your name or something. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember I was even tagged. You tagged me in one of them. And a lot of it was funny because you would get to like 12 people and you'd be like, who am I going to tag next? Because you just like, sometimes you would run out of people And so I remember you tagged me in a what classic act. I don't know why I remember this. What classic actor do you represent? And you chose Charles Gable for me. And I'm like, why am I Charles Gable? I'm like, I swear he just ran out of people. Like, I swear he had that tag on 12 people, you know, and he ran out.
I used to get excited when I get tagged in a photo. I'd be like,
oh, what's going on? Now I'm like, what kind of scam is it? Is it one of those like Ray-Bans, like get Ray-Bans for a discount or something? But yeah, you'd get tagged in that. Surveys were a big thing, doing those surveys. And then what was some of the other ones? There was like, so talking about games, like Facebook is, it kind of peaked for games for a while. Now I feel like not a lot of people get on Facebook to do games. But I remember there was like some really basic ones at the beginning, like Oregon Trail. If you've ever played Oregon Trail, the little turn-based game, it always used to tick me off because I'd be getting so close. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you died because of da-da-da-da-da. And you got to restart. It's like, dang it. But then it kind of got more into, like, I remember there was like Farmville. And then what was the other one? Like Pet World? There was like one where it was like a bunch of pets.
Pet World. And remember you could like gift people stuff and it's like so-and-so gifted you 50 coins.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate you. There was like Pet World. There was like a few other ones that were really, really big. I'm not going to lie. I was on Pet World, but it was for the ladies again because they're just like, anytime a girl would be like, you should get a little, it's like, sure, I'll get a little dog on there for you. Why not?
Making groups and pages were like a big thing.
People just did that like eating candy. Like people did that all the time.
It's like if you wanted to get famous, instead of having like Instagram or your own, it would be like you would make a page and however many people liked your page or follow your page. I mean, it's similar to like followers now, but you'd be like, yeah, like when we made that campaign for Uncle Steve page.
Oh, Uncle Steve.
Like, people like our page.
What I think is funny as mess is there's still people that look at that page and I'm like, who's looking at this page right now? I don't even know why we kept it up.
I think it's the original one because it's like back then you would like do a shorthand. It's like THX. Thanks you. Now people like type things out though. They actually type
Hold
out.
On.
They don't use the abbreviation anymore.
Well, and kind of going back to how conversations went too, it was a lot more segmented and probably because like, on Facebook and different things, you had to physically get off and do things and go, okay, be right back because I'm doing such and such. But now conversations are very fluid. Like you'll be texting with somebody and there could be a long break. And then they come back to texting you and it's just an ever going conversation. A lot of the times you would start off on a conversation. And it's like, okay, I got to go G2G because, you know, of this or that. And then it'd be like, I'll be back around this time. And that's how you also knew if a girl liked you because she would tell you what time she was going to be back. Like, yep. I'll be back around this time. If she just said, I'll be back, like she probably ain't into you.
And then if you saw her like leave, like actually leave and go like go red instead of or gray, or be like, 14 minutes ago they were active or whatever, you'd be like, okay, legit. But if she just stayed green the whole time, it was like,
man. She ghosted me right now.
Or if you saw her like come back online and then she immediately messaged you like within a couple minutes and you're like, okay, she's going to be back online. Like she actually followed through.
It's like there was all these little cues that you knew, like, okay, like this is what's going
like on. On the bottom of your desktop, like, so right here on the right-hand side, you would like pull up a toolbar and you could see everyone who was like, and it would always
put people
that you communicated with the most, like first, kind of how it does now.
Man. I used to love getting on Facebook and be like, which honeys are on the list tonight?
And then so when you chat with them, they pull up their own separate window so you could like minimize them. So it used to be at the bottom screen, it'd be like, so-and-so, what?
You'd be opening up all these different tabs and just like, all right, here we go. We're going to have all these little conversations and
so
see.
That sounds so bad.
But hey, man, it was the time. It was definitely the time. And that was definitely the thing to do, especially because, and you've talked about this before, but summer break and things like that, if you did not have their number, you know, other than calling people, and again, landlines are a big thing. Everybody had home phones for the most part. Yep. And so you either had their home phone, and if they had a cell phone, you might have their cell phone number. But again, minutes were a thing. So you had to be very conscious of that sort of thing. And so really, Facebook and MySpace were like, okay, when you get off to summer, if you don't have their number or you don't want to call their house, because again, it's kind of awkward, you call their house and they mama answers and it's like, oh, hey girl, you got somebody on the phone for you and stuff like that, versus you can just hit them up on Facebook if they're online.
The phone, like, people would talk to you more on Facebook than they would like text you. Like, texting was like not really that, like, if you actually want to talk to someone, you message them on Facebook. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it was a big way to keep up with people. Like, there was a, that's pretty much how you kept up with people, especially during the summertime or even during winter break. Like, it sounds kind of weird because a lot of us adults, adult millennials, if you think back, like, I remember winter break, even though it was like 3 weeks, that felt like forever, especially if you like talking to a girl or a few and you're like, I'm trying to keep up with the time, because I mean, middle school especially was real finicky to where it's like, if you don't talk to a girl for 3 weeks, she'd be talking to the neighbor dude and like, you're out because you hadn't talked to her in 3 weeks. So it's one of those things of like, you really wanted to keep track of what's going on and like keep up with these people. And so it worked really well. But yeah, it was always good if you were able to get their number. But at the same time, if you had them on Facebook or MySpace, like, it was even better, even better.
And then Instagram, that just became a point of just uploading photos. Nobody used it as how they use it now. Like, and then you remember Twitter? Twitter was a big
Twitter,
like 2010. It still is now, but I've heard Twitter is just like a wasteland. Like, don't go on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
I heard it's horrible. Yeah,
Twitter's kind of like Reddit, except Reddit, you know, has like thought-provoking questions and things sometimes. But a lot of times what happens on Reddit and Twitter is people just like rip other people. They just go on there just to rip other people. But there was Instagram. Like, Instagram used to be like, if you remember what Flickr was, like, Flickr is still a thing, but pretty much it was, okay, you could just upload your photos, but nobody is really going on there to, like, nobody was on there to get famous. That's for sure. Yeah. Like, nobody's on there to promote their business. It was literally just, hey, I'm on this vacation and here's a few like photos from my vacation. There wasn't any like messaging. There wasn't anything like that. Like, you'd comment on their stuff, but that was pretty much it. And then when Facebook took it over, that's when it started becoming more of a social media platform and things like that. And then I remember in 2010, 2011, when old Snapchat first came out, and that's definitely changed. A lot of people, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in the younger generation, I'm sure they still use it for this. But they probably had no clue why it started and why it's the little ghost as the icon. And reason being, you know, it was only for sending things that you didn't want other people to see. That's why the timing was so. There wasn't this whole like, you can view it indefinitely, you can do whatever. It was a one-time deal. It was, you open it once, and that was it. That's all you got to see of it. And it was supposed to be a secret hidden thing. And it's changed a lot over the years. Like, it's changed a ton over the years.
Yep. It's crazy. Snapchat, I feel like Facebook is definitely for boomers, Gen X, Instagram millennials, and then Snapchat, Gen Z, I guess. I hope Gen Alpha does not use, because like, I think the oldest Gen Alpha is just like the, so I'm hoping Gen Alpha doesn't use it. But Gen Z uses Snapchat a lot. Like, even now, you know, back in the day, it was like, girl, let me get your number. Well, now it's like, can I get your Snapchat?
Can I get your Snap?
That's what it's moved to.
And, you know, I remember a day when Snapchat did not have an instant messaging feature, like, at all. There was no, like, text feature. Like, you could not text people through Snapchat. It was literally, you sent them photos. That was it. Like, you could not send them anything else. So, yeah, and I remember going on Snap streaks with people, and that was, like, a whole thing for a while and whatnot. Social media in general has changed and evolved quite a bit. At first, it was very rudimentary and, you know, you kept up with stuff. One of the things I did not like about, you know, the downfall of MySpace, we could talk about that for a minute. The downfall of MySpace, I feel like it definitely was for millennials. There was not a lot of older people on there. And that is what I actually enjoyed about MySpace was Facebook. Anything you posted on Facebook, you were subject to some adult, and you're like, I remember my MySpace, I didn't have anybody from the church on there besides like maybe some people who are in our age group who had MySpaces who were allowed to, but it was mainly people from school and people our age. And so they're the only people who are like commenting or doing anything on there. And Facebook, it was like, you would have, and this sounds kind of creepy, but you would have like this 55-year-old from church going, oh, that sounds like fun. And you're just like, I'm trying to get the honeys to comment. I ain't trying to get you to comment on this. And so you would kind of have that sort of thing. And so I felt like I had to be more careful on Facebook of what I posted and what I did, because again, there was that enhanced visibility. And a lot of the people knew, you know, my parents and knew other people in the church. So it's like, if you post something on there, that's when I guess social media accountability of like, be careful what you post became really, really real was Facebook. I mean, we even got dragged into the youth pastor's office because of something Chris posted about the youth group.
Oh, so. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. Crazy. But even now, I feel like Facebook, even though a lot of the millennial and younger generations are going away from, like, companies will still look at your Facebook to like,
oh, see, for sure,
like what you're posting. And now Instagram, all your social media is like, they want to know to see what you're posting. So really, really now I use Facebook to like keep up with people and life events. And then like Instagram is just really my wrestling feed.
Yeah,
that's really it.
That's me. It's like, you know, Facebook, I really don't ever get on Facebook like at all. Like it, besides what we do on the Donut Box podcast page, which go follow us and like us over there if you haven't already. But besides what I do on that page over there, I'm really not on there at all, because really what I've noticed is the people that I follow and the people that I like, they typically duplicate whatever they're doing on Facebook to Instagram. So it's like what you see on Instagram for their page is the same thing that you'll see on their Facebook page. So it's, you're not missing anything per se on that side. So I typically don't go over there a ton. Now there'll be some times where I'll be like, I wonder what this person is doing. And I have noticed that Instagram people make their handles a little bit more discreet than Facebook.
It's harder to find people on Instagram.
So sometimes if I cannot find them, I'll go over to Facebook. Or a little trick for you folks, if you don't know this, if you ever get a random number call you that's not a scam number, sometimes you could put it into Facebook, and if they're registered through Facebook, it'll show you to their profile and go, oh yeah, that's who's calling me. Yeah, I found out a few people that like randomly got my number, and it's like, oh, how the heck did you get my number over here, you know, through Facebook? So it's like, it still has its uses, and I've thought about deleting my Facebook a few times, but it's just like, I don't know. Like sometimes it's like, it proves useful to find people and do different things. So it's definitely changed over time, for sure.
So kind of shifting gears a little bit, with now AI, ChatGPT, all that, how do you feel like millennials are adjusting to ChatGPT, and how do you feel about it in general? Do you feel like it's a good tool? Do you feel like it's lazy if you use it? How do you feel with our generation?
So, you know, I think with anything, it's a balance, right? I think you have to balance it. It's great, but you can overuse it. So I think what's great about it is a tool. And what is tool? What do tools? Tools do? Tools save you time. And saving time is really, really paramount in a lot of things that we do. For instance, there's some things that I do emails wise, work wise, things like that, where maybe I'm a tad bit emotional, more emotional than I should be, or I'm just like, man, this isn't prim and polished like I like this email to be. And sure, I could take the time and go through and read this email over and change the verbiage and things like that, but it takes time. And I know that sounds bad because it's like, how much time, like 5-10 minutes? Sure. But you think about how many emails I'm having to send out per day and how much I'm having to do and things like that. Typically, if I can just go into ChatGPT and say, hey, this is the email that I'm sending out, this is what I'm trying to get accomplished. And I think that's the biggest thing too, is a lot of people who are worried about AI just think, oh, you can pop this prompt in here and it's going to do exactly what you want it to do. Sometimes, yes, if it's a really simple prompt, but a lot of times, even in the example that I'm using, you have to really define like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do with this. And so a lot of times it's not like it saves you time, but at the same time, it's not this say all end all of like, okay, it's taking over your mind to where you're not even having to think. You still have to think like, hey, this is what I'm trying to accomplish from this. And then it refines it and says, okay, I think this is what you're looking for. And then sometimes if you read it over, you go, maybe not. Then you have to, you know, kind of touch it up from there. But a lot of times it'll give you a spring off point, or it'll give you kind of, and that's how I use it, is a lot of times if I'm having some sort of mental block or writer's block or something like that, I'm going, okay, to save me some time, how would you get around this? And sometimes it's right, sometimes it's not. A lot of times it is. And then, for instance, even when I'm doing like thumbnails for the Donut Box podcast here, I will, you know, everything looks great except for this font or this color of a font. And I'm going, I don't know what color would look better. I've tried 3 different colors. All of them don't exactly look up to what I'm looking to do. You upload to ChatGPT and say, hey, what color would go best for this background? And they'll go, oh, you know, here's the color and whatever. And I go, okay, what's the color code for Canva? And it'll go, bam, here. And it'll give it to you. And that saves you a ton of time instead of just guessing and checking, guessing and checking, guessing and checking until you find it. Like, you could totally do it on your own. But if you're just using it as a tool and whatnot, I think it's totally fine. Now, where it's not exactly great is I've heard so many colleges and universities, and we have a lot of Gen Zers who are in college and university right now, to where that's all that they will do. It's like every paper, ChatGPT, everything, ChatGPT. And I know there's AI checkers now, but there's still a ton of ways you can get around that kind of stuff. But at the same time, if you're using it instead of having to think, I think that's where it's a problem, where you're not critically thinking about things and you're letting AI just think for you. And you're not, because part of what, you know, writing papers are for is time management, is how to do these things, how to format correctly, things like that. That's what it's teaching you how to do. And if you're going, okay, I want you to format this the way they're telling me to, I want you to do all this, and you're not actually learning what's going on, then that's a problem. You're using it way too far. Now, if it's just, hey, I already know how to do this, but I need a little bit of help to cut some timing down, I think that's perfectly fine. But I think if you're using it for everything and everything you do, that's way over the line. And I think that you're becoming way too dependent on it. And then, again, your mind's a muscle. If you're not exercising it and you're not actively doing certain things, then you'll lose those skills. And so if you're not critically thinking, you're going to lose that ability.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I'll use it for, hey, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think about this? And it'll be like, yeah. And ChatGPT is a good hype person. So it'll be like,
yeah,
great. This is great. I love this, but here's some ways that you can improve. And it's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, I didn't think that. Okay, now let's try to refine it. And if you're using it, again, as a tool to help refine what you already have, or like you said, to even be a springboard, it's like, hey, I'm thinking this, give me some ideas. And even with the idea, if you take, okay, I like this idea, but what if we did this? Let's do this. And so you're working with it. It's not just that, hey, generate these questions for me, copy and paste. Like, now, when I was writing curriculum, I would like be like, okay, here's the Bible lesson that we're doing. Give me some game suggestions. Okay, now help me think of some questions for this age group, this age group. Okay, I don't like these questions. Let's try to introduce more of this into it. And it's like, okay, it's a good tool. So I don't think it's something we should be afraid of, but I do think it's a tool that helps us cut down on time so that we can do other things.
Yeah, and I'm sure that even a lot of those questions that you're asking for these age groups, you'll read through them and go, okay, on the right track, but let me refine them and do this and this and this. And maybe I could change this question to say this and this and this, to where it's not exactly, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is there's a lot of people that are just like ChatGPT and done. For me personally, one, I don't think AI is there yet. It's not there to where you can just input this stuff and go on without there being some serious definition in there. And then you're really not saving any time because you've spent this whole entire paragraph defining what you want it to do, kind of thing. But, you know, I've heard of a ton of people. I've heard of, you know, in your field, and pastors, I've heard of all sorts of people like, write me a sermon based off of this and just go strictly off of that. I think that's totally wrong. You know, like that stuff is just totally wrong. But if it's like, I've written this sermon, what do you think of it? Because, and what I'll tell you another example where it really, really helps me is I'm could be long-winded and sometimes I can be off points, or I can know the points that I want to say, but I don't know how to exactly connect those points and how to go bam, 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 bam in a very efficient way. ChatGPT is great because you go, here's all the points that I want to hit. Tell me a good way that I can go these points all the way down. Like, for instance, I had a conference I had to speak at not too long ago, and I'm like, here's what I want to say. Give me a very clear, concise, professional flow to this. But all the information is already there. I already came up with all the information. I'm just looking for the flow. What's the best flow for this? And it's great at that. It'll say, okay, no, this is, you need to lead into this, to this, to this, to this. And it's like, okay, no, that's great. And again, you can figure all that out on my own. I can figure all that out on my own. But in the grand scheme of everything else I'm having to do, it's like, listen, I'll let AI take care of that for me, right? So I think that's where that's at here. So on to one of my favorite questions here, because I know exactly where this is going to go. Let's talk about your first job, Christopher. Your first job. We've talked about this before. What was your first job and what did it teach you about adulthood? And I'll have a follow-up question after you answer me that one.
Okay, so my first job ever, I got when I was 16 years old. I worked for the mouse, not Mickey. I worked for a mouse called Charles Entertainment Cheese, aka Chuck E. Cheese. So I remember I wanted a job because I knew, like, you get a job, and I knew my parents weren't going to pay for a car for me. So I was like, I need money so I can save up for a car. Like, I want to be able to drive. I want to be able to have my own money. Like, I want to be independent, all that. So I remember, like, driving around with my dad. We were just like, okay, we're going to apply at this place. We're going to apply at this place, whatever. And Chuck E. Cheese just happened to be on the list. And I was like, hey, I like Chuck E. Cheese. They've had a lot of firsts for me, a lot of firsts. And so I was like, okay, let me apply, filled out the application, and they're like, well, we can interview on the spot. And I was like, okay. And then they were like, okay, you're hired on the spot. Bad thought. So I remember being excited, being like, yeah, I'm gonna work for Chuck E. Cheese, like, I'm gonna have my own money, this and that. And so I was the game room attendant, which I thought it was just gonna be fixing the games and filling the games with tickets and all that. Nope. I pretty much, it was the largest job in the whole place, and you pretty much did everything except make the pizzas, run the ticket counter, except if you needed to, you would run the ticket counter and do birthday parties. So you would have to run the pizzas to the customers. Then you would also have to, like, clean up after them. You'd have to bust the pizzas or bust the tables, restock all the napkins, cheeses at the end of the night, fill all the tickets with games, clean inside the little playground place. And then you would have to, like, wipe all 100 games down from top to bottom, like, everywhere, right? Every single night, vacuum the whole entire restaurant by yourself. And on top of that, anytime that they wanted the kid or the kids wanted to do have Chucky come out and appear, guess who got in the Chucky seat? It was me. So I remember the first time ever, they were like, okay, it's time for you to get in the Chucky suit. And they took me to this room and they gave me the code and they were like, this is the biggest thing you have to know. You keep this door closed because we don't want any kid to see you changing into the Chucky costume. Like, you can't do that. It's going to ruin the magic, right? So I remember, like, going in there and, like, there was, like, this light shining on the giant head that you would put. Like, it was almost like a cult shrine of Chuck E. Cheese. It was like, it was out of a movie. I saw it when I first opened it and it was okay. So there were, like, I think there were, like, 6 different pieces to get into the Chucky suit. So anytime they wanted you to do like a walk around, whatever, they were like, hey, you got to stop what you're doing and you got to get into the Chucky suit. You would have to, first you'd have to put on, like, the bottom half. And it was like, you put it on like a pair of pants and there were these suspenders things that, like, held it on to you. So you were wearing that. Then you would have to put on the feet, like, put on the shoes. And then you would have to put on this big old jersey that he wore. So, like, and it had, like, the wrap for whatever. Then you would have to put the rat gloves on the hands. And then you would have to take this giant head that weighed like 10 to 15 pounds and you put it on there, right? And you could barely see. And you better pray to the sweet Lord baby Jesus that as soon as you come out there, you don't get bum rushed by a whole bunch of kids because they're excited. They're happy. Chucky's here. You walk around, all the kids would follow Chucky like the Pied Piper. You'd be giving out all the tickets in the Chucky Kingdom and making the kids happy. And then the kids that weren't happy, they would kick you in where the sun don't shine. I had a couple kids do that. So what that job really taught me was we had 2 managers, and there was one that was kind of a chill manager, relaxed, and, like, he didn't really do his job. He was just kind of there. And then there was another manager who he was like, he had been there, like, he basically worked his way from the bottom up. So he had been a manager, been with the company for a long time. And so I remember, like, I had to learn time management because if I didn't get everything done at a certain time, I would be behind. And, like, I didn't want to get out late. So at the end of the night, like, they would come and check all your stuff. They make sure the tables are bussed. Like, they would make sure, like, the napkins and cheeses were filled. They would make sure the restaurant was vacuumed, swept under the tables, all that, games clean. So I remember this one manager, bro, like, he would be like, nope, there's fingerprints at the end of this table. Like, got to clean it again. It's like, oh, dude. Then, like, one time I think I filled the front half of the napkins and didn't fill the back half. And he was like, nope, didn't fill the back half of the napkins. Got to go fix that. Then it was like, man, then it was like, he'd go up to the games, like put his hand on there. There's dust coming down. You didn't clean the top of this. He'd make me go back and redo all of it. And I was like, dude, like, what do you want from me? Like, just give me a break. Like, let me go home. But I realized and learned, like, I needed to do the job right. Or if I didn't do the job right, like, I was going to have to go back and do it again. And he really was the one who helped me understand, like, this is why I'm making you do this, because we have a standard of excellence. So you're going to want to do everything to the best of your ability. And as soon as I figured out like how to get all of that done in my time management, like he became my favorite manager. I became one of their top guys because they were like, yeah, you clean right. You do this right. Like we can trust you to get all this done. And so for one kid to do that on a weeknight, and again, there was like probably 80 tables, like 100.
Age 16 too. Right? Age 16.
And I got to the point where I was like training other 20-year-olds, like this and that. So there was like a little bit of a leadership deal. And I was like, bro, I'm 16. Like, what the heck? Like, but all that to say, it did teach me like how to have pride in my work. And I saved money during that time. I remember like I wouldn't even really go out to eat that much. And if I did, yeah, it would be like, we're going out to eat with the youth. But I'd be like, sorry, guys, like I'm not going out to eat with y'all. So I packed all that money away for like 10 months, 9 months at $2,500 when I quit that job. And I remember I got to purchase my first car in cash. And like, that was such a great feeling to where it was like, I bought this car myself. And that's why I love that car so much. Cause it was like, I bought this with my own money. Like nobody helped me, all that stuff. So it was a good first job, but it was a hard first job. I'll say that much.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I remember a telephone call one night, bro. This poor Chris, he was ready to quit. He was ready to quit. This kid had taken a dookie on the carpet and he was having to clean it up. And he's like, I'm going to quit. I swear I'm going to quit. And it was just like, he was so mad, bro. I understood. I was like, dang, that's messed up. But I mean, you even had to like wipe out like the tunnels at all the kids, like the playground area. Like, I mean, it was a whole thing. So I'm sure it definitely taught you a lot of lessons there. So going to mine, I had a few unofficial jobs, you know, that told Uncle Sam didn't take taxes on at the beginning there. One, I had a job where I was mowing the grass for a landlord. And how that came about was, and I, of course, you learn a lot of lessons about basically when you're running your own business. But, you know, I had a lawnmower and that was it. I didn't even have a weed eater. But this guy, he was older, probably in his 70s, and he had all these rental properties. And in the middle of this cul-de-sac that we lived in, I'd never seen a cul-de-sac like it before then. And to this point, I still haven't seen one like it. But it had this big grass circle in the middle, like huge grass circle. And that's where we'd always like play football as a kid and all sorts of stuff. It was out the grass circle. But I would see him out there every week having a mow, because in Georgia, like the grass grew fast. Like if you didn't keep that thing in check, like it was going to go. So I saw him every week and sometimes in the summer, like twice a week having to do that. And poor guy, like looked like he was about to just keel over from all the work he was having to do, because it wasn't just that, like he had to keep up with his property, and his property was like a couple acres and other rental properties that were empty and all sorts of stuff. And so I went out there and offered and was like, hey, I don't have a weed eater or anything like that, but I do have a lawnmower and like I can help. And he's like, oh, great. That's great. And so he ended up like splitting some with me. And it was kind of a nice time, because what would end up happening is I would mow all the grasses he would tell me to. And then I'd go over to him and his wife's house. And it was kind of like, you know, a grandparent situation. And I remember like I'd be waiting on the cash and she'd be like, let me go write you a check. Here, have a sweet tea. And we would sit there and watch the Braves game. Like there'd always be a Braves game on. And so we'd always sit there and watch baseball. And then she'd come out with the check and be like, all right, we all have a good day. And like it was pretty cool. And so after that, I was doing that. And then my other job was at the Barnyard Flea Market in Augusta, Georgia. And it had these little $10 tables out back. So you could just rent them for 10 bucks, and it was first come, first serve. And so basically you'd get out there, you would rent your table. And I mean, you could put whatever crap you wanted out there. Like it could be the crappiest of crap. They didn't care. Like just put whatever you want out there. And so we also went to this auction in South Carolina, and they would sell stuff like any Joe Schmo can come and sell anything there. You can go and sell whatever. And so people, my favorite was tools, because people would come and sell their old little toolbox, and it'd be like this little dinky little toolbox, and the bidding would get down to like $5, and it'd be like, I'll take it for $5. Because I knew, like, even, you know, there's probably 20, 25 tools in there, or even more sometimes. And I knew even if I sold every tool for a dollar, which everybody loves that. They're like, oh man, tools for a dollar and things like that. Because you'd have all sorts of like workers, laborers, whatever, coming over there and be like, how much is this? A dollar. And then before you know, like, everybody's like feeding frenzy over this stuff because it's like, oh, it's only a dollar. But, you know, I only bought it for $5. So you sell everything for a dollar, you're making profit. You're making so much profit. So it doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, it's a good deal for everybody. So I made some good money doing that. We move out to Texas, and my first official W-2 job, where I had to, you know, pay the old Uncle Sam man, or Samuel L. Jackson, whatever you want to call him. So you had to pay him, was the Boot Corral. And I'm not going to go too far into that because, listen, y'all can go and listen to the Boot Corral stories. I think we had like, what, 8, 9 Boot Corral character stories, because there was a ton of characters up there. Go listen to our audio versions for that. They're all labeled Boot Corral. So if you want to go listen to that, you can. But I remember starting there. And if there was anything that was actually good, I interviewed for a sales position at first. And the sales positions there were commission-based exclusively. So it was 4% commission. And the manager, for as narcissistic and terrible as he was like, I'm not going to put you in that situation because all those salesmen that are out there are sharks and they'll eat you alive. And I was only 17. I didn't know any, like, I thought I knew about Western wear, but I didn't know nothing about Western wear at the time. Like, I didn't know anything. And so he's like, I'm going to put you in the back. We need a stalker to like stalk the shelves and whatnot, which was funny because we didn't actually stalk the shelves. We literally just prepped the stuff, pushed it out there in the salesman.
Yeah.
So it was minimum wage. And so he's like, I'm going to start you over there. And I was only doing it part time because I was in football, and I started in the summertime, and eventually got Chris a job there full time later on. And it was kind of cool because we got to work with my buddy over there. But when I first started over there, we had a, so there was a stalker, and then there was the receiver position. And the receiver, all these names sound really horrible. I just thought about that. But so the receiver's job was they printed out all the tags, and the stalkers basically prepped all the merchandise, got all the tags in there, and then got it out to the floor. And so basically, since I was doing football in the morning, it was also the summertime in Western wear. The summertime was slow. That was like the slow time. So they weren't getting a lot of stock in, like they weren't getting a lot of, you know, merchandise in. So basically the stock would come in the morning. The receiver would print out all the tags for me. And then when I would get off, I would come out and I would, you know, tag all the stuff, push it all out, whatnot. The whole deal was, you had to get all the work done, and it's a Monday through Friday job as long as you get all the work done. But if you had to stay over, that was a no-no. Like, the store closed at 9 o'clock. If you go past that point because you're still stocking things, like, that's not good. You get a write-up for that. And so it really, again, like Chris talked about, it helped me, it helped teach me time management because, again, sometimes I wouldn't get in until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. And that sounds like, oh, well, you got like 3, 4 hours, depending on how much stuff was there. That could be a little bit of a stretch, especially when you're the only one and you're tagging all this stuff. And so there was a few times there at the beginning where like I cut it close. And then also being 17, going on 18, and then turning 18 while I worked there, I didn't have the best attention to detail at the time. It was more like, oh yeah, like just plug and chug, plug and chug, plug and chug. And you had to be very detailed oriented. I wouldn't say very, but you had to be a lot more detail oriented because each, you know, product had a UPC code, a barcode, and a specific lettering code that you had to match everything up to. And so sometimes you'd only have one tag for a singular shirt that was like one style of shirt, and there would only be one. Or there would be a group of shirts that had, you know, like this Hawaiian looking shirt, right? And they would have certain styles. And so you'd have to match those tags with that style. And if you got them wrong, it became very apparent when you got it wrong, because you'd come out with all these tags and go, wait a second, this one doesn't match with this one. This one doesn't match with this one. And then things like, we had to, with boots, we always had to put mate tags on each one. So each boot had a mate, right? You'd had the two boots. You'd always have to make sure you put stickers on both. And, you know, if you're doing the whole process fast, because you had to take all the stuffing out, you had to take all this stuff out, you had to put the security code through, it's very easy to miss a step somewhere in there. And so basically you had to learn time management. And I definitely had to learn attention to detail, because you think that manager was going to let it fly if I missed something like that? Because, I mean, the first thing they would notice is like, oh, we had a pair of boots go out today. And when we look for the mate tags, they weren't there. So I know that you missed that at some point. So like, it might not be right then that you get in trouble, but they'll find out at some point like, hey, this is not good. And then there were some times where, you know, you're trying to get out of there before 9 o'clock and you're trying to put these tags in, and you screw up and put the tags for these shirts on these shirts instead. And then all of a sudden you got to rip all these off and the receiver's ticked off because now they got to go to the computer and redo the tags and all this other stuff. So it taught me really fast of like, hey, you want to be very attention to detail, especially when you're putting on a lot of stock. And as the year goes on into Christmas time, that's when the stock really becomes a lot. Like you get ton of stock in. And so you're having to move fast. You're having to go fast. And that's when my buddy Chris came on. What month did you end up coming on? Was it like September. August, September?
Yeah, it was September. And it was right in the middle of Christmas. And I think we got our Christmas shipment at the beginning of October. But I remember the current receiver, she would drag it out long. And so it was like we were working 12-hour days every day. And I was like, bro, like, there's got to be a faster way to do this. Like, there just has to be. So I'm glad I figured out how to, like, get the tags and the processes. And once we did, like, me and Micah had our groove. And then our friend Zachary and Cheese worked back there. So we all, and he was part-time, too. So whenever he'd come in, he would, like prep the shirts, like, all that stuff. But we would get that huge shipment in October to get ready for Christmas. And I'm so glad I figured it out before then, because it was like, bro, if we would have kept running the way that we were running in August and September, oh my goodness, bro, we would have been there forever. We would have never got half the freight out.
Yeah, and we were having to work some Saturdays because we couldn't get everything done in the week. And it wasn't because we weren't getting it done fast. It would be periods of, okay, we tagged a bunch of stuff and we'd have to sit around because they were sitting there, the receiver was sitting there talking. Side story, I remember the time that she was sitting there talking in the manager's office and she was talking to this one particular manager and we all stopped and we all went in there and sat with her and there for a while. She was technically our boss, right? It was funny because she didn't get paid any more than us, I don't think, or anything, but she was like our technical
boss.
Maybe a quarter more an hour. And so we sat in there and she was like, we talked for a good minute and she didn't even like realize it. And then finally she's like, wait, what are y'all doing? Why don't you get to work? I was like, oh, I thought we were on a break. We were all like... Like, we thought we were on a break since you were sitting here for so long. And, like, bro, that just steamed her to know. And she got so mad about that. But we used to, like, pull that kind of stuff all the time. But it definitely taught me, again, that attention to detail, making sure that you get everything accurate, and make sure that everything is timing is good, because you don't want to get written up. I got written up one time, and it was not because of me. It was because of somebody else, and it was because they did exactly what I was talking about. They wanted to get out before 9 o'clock. They just started tagging stuff. They didn't care what went to where. And
was
so,
it Mr. Sleepy?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Mr. Sleepy with the yellow truck. Yes, it was. And he just wanted to tag and bag everything. And he knew better than that. Like he knew better than to do that. But it didn't take 2 seconds. That current manager that was on there, old String Bean, he literally was like, wait a second, because I think there was like cinch jeans, which are typically like $60. It was like $60 at the time. And they were like $20 or something. Yeah. And he looked at the tag and there was like, there's no way. And then he started looking at everything that got pushed out for like the last 30 minutes. And he's like, all this has to be retagged. And it was like, oh, crap. And I remember being so mad. But they had to write us all up. Like they had to write everybody up for that. It was like, oh, come on. It was so bad. But anyways, the follow-up question to that was, how did that differ? So your Charles Entertainment Cheese, how did that differ from what your idea of first job was? Like, what did you think your first job was going to be like? How'd that differ?
I don't know. You always see in the movies where it's like, hey, it's summertime. They're like working at the pool or they're working at like the ice cream, whatever.
Parlor. It's kind of a chill job. Yeah. You know, it's kind of a chill. Like everybody's friends. Yeah.
And what's funny is I think I was one of the first ones in my class to get a job. And so I remember people started getting jobs like after the next year, they started getting jobs or during that summer, and they were like, yeah, like I'm working at the Gap, or like I'm working here, and it's like really chill. And I just remember being like, bro, my job. But I thought it was going to be a lot more chill, and it definitely, I thought it was, I'm like, hey, I'm working for Chuck E. Cheese. It's going to be fun all the time. And definitely wasn't. It was a job, but I had some good moments at that job. This is kind of bad. Like, I'm thinking about it, but like, I was a 16-year-old kid, and like the older lady workers, they kind of harassed me at that job, bro. They'd be like smacking me on the butt, and like, ooh, they'd be like, ooh, you look good today. They'd be like, we were younger, we'd go out with you. And I was just like, oh my, bro, I got harassed. It was crazy.
Well, you should have taken it up with the rat, the HR department at Chuck E. Cheese.
Crazy, yeah. I have some other stories about that, but we'll move on to another time. Yeah. My last question, I'll make this my last question. What do you think our millennial generation is going to be known for? What do you think will be like our signature, or like, what classifies us?
So I think bridging a lot of technological gaps is going to be probably what we're known for the most. Now, some of the people who started the ball off and had some of the ideas of like, hey, there's a market for certain things, we're not a part of our generation. The Steve Jobs, the Bill Gates, those guys were not a part of our generation, right? But at the same time, they could see certain things coming. And just because people, and never forget this, just because people have the initial idea, it's the younger generations that are going to have, and especially when it comes to millennials, they're the ones who made it happen. Yeah, it was like Bill Gates had the initial thing of, okay, I made the, you know, whatever. And Jeff Bezos was like, yeah, you know, but think about the timings that they did this. They were older for sure, but they said, okay, this is the market that is coming with the millennials, and this is the market that is coming with the technology and whatnot. And so who are the people that they hired? Everybody is like, oh, they hired some young hotshots. It's like, well, yeah, because the young hotshots understand what the market is looking for right now and understand what technology is at this point and understands how to use it. You know, and so as time went on, a lot of those people who had the big ideas, they went to the top and oversaw things, but it was the people from our generation that came in and really started bridging those gaps. And now it's gotten to the point where there are things like AI, generative AI, all sorts of things that are almost incomprehensible to 10, 15 years ago of, hey, wow, that's crazy that this sort of thing could have been the case. But why is that? Because a lot of millennials have hit the workforce. And it's interesting because a lot of millennials, going off of the technology point and kind of on to something else, we were trendsetters when it comes to thought processes and breaking molds of, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, a lot of millennials, if you ask most of us, pretty much all of us, I don't know a millennial out there, if you say, okay, you're going to work for your company for 30 years and you're going to retire with your company, that is not the thought process anymore at all. Versus even, again, 10, I would say probably 15, 20, 25 years ago, that was still the norm. That was still definitely the norm. And if you were to ask the previous generations of why is that? Well, that's just the way that it is. That's just the way that it is. And we really challenge that way of thinking of, well, that's just how it is. Well, why is that the way that it is? We have options. We don't necessarily have to do that. Again, going to, so even blazing our own paths, I think, you know, you have a lot of people who are in the older generations who maybe even were business owners. How many of those people do we see? The old mentality was, well, you're going to go to school, you're going to do this, you're going to get a business degree, and you're going to go into the business that your dad built, and you're going to do this. And we saw so many of those businesses fail because the kids don't really want to do that. And I've seen it now to where it's okay to have the understanding of, hey, you know, dad's business is going, and whether the parents like it or not, I'm going, once he retires, we're selling it because I'm not really into it. We're going to sell the business, we're going to get rid of it, and I'm going to do what I want to do. And that's an acceptable way of thinking. So I think that they're, again, bridging the gap technologically because the older generation saw the market, but we followed through with it. And then again, the thought process is changing of, well, we're doing tradition for tradition's sake is really that's no longer. And we're even seeing the effects all the way to Gen Z now. Gen Z is like way on the opposite end spectrum of that. And again, I think we were the generation that made that pendulum swing.
Yeah, I would echo that 100%. I think everything that you said, you hit the nail right on the head. We have been the bridge generation and helping create a paradigm shift that Gen Z and now Gen Alpha are...
get to piggyback off
of. Yeah, get to piggyback off. That's the right word. Yep.
You're welcome. And but yeah, I just think it's very interesting because, you know, even growing up when we did, a lot of the mindset was just, you guys... y'all are just too emotional. You guys just want to do your own thing. And it's like, yeah, because for so long, everybody's just been doing what they were told and everything. And I think that's why 90s and 2000s, a lot of like the punk rock was huge. You know, a lot of the, there was almost like a rebellious period in there. And
the
like,
attitude era. Yeah.
The attitude era. And yeah, people could say like, okay, rock in the 80s and things like that. Like there was similar to that, like 70s, 80s, and then like hippie era, like each generation had it. But I feel like our generation really broke through a lot of those ways of thinking. So it's really interesting. We can go a long time with that. All right. So my last question here, if you could relive one part of growing up, what would it be and why?
I think it would be going back to the social media when everything was fresh and new and everything, because it was all so fresh and so new. And so even talking about it, I'm like, man, I wish I could go back to those times. So
it's like, yeah, it was a lot simpler.
It's new, but we're still not so connected to it. Like we're not having to live with the phone attached to our hand. We can still have that freedom. I would also say like the family aspect of, hey, we are still going to come to the table and we're going to eat dinner together. And then we're going to go watch our family show together and then for bed. That's not as much common anymore. It's like, hey, we're all doing our own thing. We're all going to eat at the couch and watch TV. But like having that united family time or having something to look forward to where it's like, hey, this show is coming on Thursday. I have something to look forward to. So I would say that's something that I do really miss. I like technology, but I think we're too plugged into technology now to where it's like, yeah, even now with friends, like, what are you doing most of the time? What are the group of people doing when they're just hanging out? They're on their phones, like, just hanging out. But, like, going back to the days where you can play board games together or hang out together and technology's not so prevalent. So that's what I would say. Yeah,
I agree with that. I'm going to double down on that as well. I miss a time where things aren't so layered. And I think that's part of what you're saying as well is where we used to be focused on singular things, right? If we're sitting here with the family watching TV, there's only the focus of what is on the TV right now. And I'm very guilty of this too, but you'll be sitting here and I'll be watching TV and the TV is just the background noise at this point. Like, yes, you're paying attention to it, but it is the background noise. You're on your phone, you're texting other people, you're doing this, you're doing that. And I've even been guilty where it's like, okay, I'm working. Like I have a tedious project or something like that. You have somebody on Teams popping up, you're messaging them, you're working on your project, you have TV going in the background, you might have your text messages going off. Think about how many layers all of that is. That's so many layers all the way around. And, you know, I never really understood when a lot of older people were like, it was just a simpler time. And I'm not saying that it was simpler. I think it's just different. I wouldn't say it's different, but it seems simpler because there was only that singular aspect. If I'm doing this right now, this is what I'm doing. Right now, if you ask most people, and I think that's why a lot of older people have problem, not just with technology, but other things, is because so many older people have a problem with multitasking. Our generation is great at multitasking. We're fantastic. Gen Z is just amazing at multitasking. But again, it's because there are so many layers. So when you're in those many layers, your mind, it's almost like having that web browser open with all these different tabs. You have to understand where you're at each tab. And a lot of times, I think that's where it also screws us up because back then, I remember being able to rest because, okay, I'm going to turn the TV off. And there was separation from things. There was clear, solid separation from things. Now you have to make a concerted effort to, I'm going to physically separate this, I'm physically going to stop this, and I'm going to make sure that I have desensitized myself pretty much. I'm going to make sure that the sensories are gone, all the sensories are gone, or I'm going to limit it to a certain pool of sensories because it does wear you out. And I don't think people really feel and understand that. I miss the way that sports were back when we were a kid. And I'll tell you why. Now we live, and I'm going to sound like such a crotchety old man, but I think about how rough and tumble, a lot of how physical, we're talking about football, basketball, that sort of thing, right? Basketball used to be get up in the paint and you fight to get that thing to the rim. Now it's nobody plays defense, everybody's shooting threes, right? And yeah, it's a style, but come on, man. I miss those times where it's like, man, people are just rough and tumble. You watch these football players, like whatever happened to having like tape on your face mask, right? Like that's not a thing anymore. Now you got people who are painting their fingernails and doing all sorts of crap. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, we've lost some of this. And a lot of the rule changes that have been put into place, it's like, okay, now we're just getting to the point where we're, you know, it's like, well, people can get hurt. Yeah, you know, for people like me who did play football in that era, we knew what we signed up for. We weren't stupid. We knew we could get hurt. Like that's part of it. You see your friend go down and get hurt. That's a part of it. And the people who are playing now know they can get hurt. That's a part of it. Like that's a part of it. And I'm not saying that we need to go to like full on gladiator-esque stuff like that. But, you know, even like MMA, they changed the gloves up and they changed all this other stuff, you know, to be more safe. And it's like, listen, I get it. I do. But at the same token, we're losing some of that aspect. It's human nature to want to watch this sort of stuff. It's human nature to want to see more of the rough and tumble side of things because most of our lives are not like that, right? And so that's why there's an appeal there. So you take that sort of thing away. I don't know. I feel like we're just sort of losing a certain human aspect of things because we're going a little too soft. Again, I sound like such a crotchety old man. We're too soft. We're getting too soft. It's like, I'm not trying to say that. But at the same time, you know, it's hard for me to watch these certain things because, you know, even watching football mini camps and things like that, it's like they're not in pads. Most of the time during their preseason, it's like the only time they get in pads is preseason games, but they're going half speed and they're not trying to hurt each other. And it's like, dude, just play the darn sport. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how times have changed, but it's been a good episode going down memory lane, simpler time. Things, I'm also not one of those guys that's like, oh yeah, the best days are behind us. Like, I appreciate them and I think of them fondly, but I think the best days are ahead. And it's exciting to see where it's going to go. And even in 10, 20 years, I'm interested to see how we're going to be like, oh yeah, during like post-COVID, because that's a whole nother like paradigm shift.
Yep. And just like we were talking about before with the whole pendulum swinging, I feel like, yeah, it's going this way. It'll come back this way. And we'll get to a point where we're more in the middle or more like it was during childhood with mentalities, thought processes, right, wrong, or indifferent. And it's like there'll be things that we like. There'll be things that we dislike. It'll never be perfect. But I do love some things about now, but I do look fondly on the past. But yeah, man, Donut Box Podcast, DOUGHNUT Box Pod over on YouTube and Instagram. So go check that out. We got some things cooking, man. Chris got some things cooking. I'm super excited for the direction that we're going. I'm excited for our future, man. Screw the rest of everybody. I'm ready for our future. I'm ready for our future over here at over at the Donut Box Podcast and the Trash Can Umbrella. But man, it's been a great episode. I think it's time to let the starship take us out. But what do you think, Chris?
Yeah.
Anything else?
For us to take us out. I'm Chris.
And I'm Micah.
And this has been the Donut Box Podcast.
Millennial Edition.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that